We'd like to thank you for tuning us in here on 88.9 KETR and streaming at KETR.org. This is Notably Texan. I'm your host, Matt Menke. And you'll quickly notice a lack of advertisements and commercials on this station, unlike others you can tune in our area. That's because we are directly supported by people who like to tune in. So if you haven't done so lately or ever, why not go to our site today, KETR.org, click the donate button in the upper right-hand corner. Make a contribution in any amount that fits your budget. It will be turned into great public radio for Northeast Texas, and we appreciate your support. One of the things that I love to do here on the show is invite the people behind the music to speak with us about their songs and to learn more about them. And that's exactly what we'll do today with a performer who's been called one of Austin's most promising young singer-songwriters. And her voice is heard often in our Notably Texan playlists. She recently put out her latest album, Plastic Flowers. And it's a real joy to learn more today about Nicole Wagner. Well, you've been heard on this program going back to your 2017 Plotting the Constellations EP, which really instantly garnered you a regular spot on our playlists, and it is a real joy to have you speaking with me today. Welcome to Notably Texan, Nicole.
Thank you.
I want to focus on your new Plastic Flowers album in a bit, but if we can, kind of take me back to your origin story, if you will. I know you're in Austin now, but you're not originally from Texas, are you?
No, I've been in Texas since 2010. I moved here sort of by accident and sort of to avoid jury duty.
Really?
Really. I had been living in Colorado after I grew up in Colorado, but I'd gone back after college and knew I wanted to be someplace a little bit warmer with, kind of just a different scenery. A friend of mine said, "Hey, why don't you come down and like check out Austin? Come hang out on our couch for a couple days." And I did that. I took her up on that. And that couple days turned into me like kind of couch surfing and subletting for several months. And then suddenly I had to make a decision. I could go back to Colorado because I had put off my jury duty so many times that I couldn't put it off anymore.
Okay.
Or I could go to Old Settlers Music Festival.
Well, kind of an easy decision then, huh?
It really was. It was like Sam Bush and Patty Griffin and Sonny Landreth. And it was like a really great lineup that year, especially. And I was just like, well, I had my mom send me my birth certificate so I could go down to the DMV and get a driver's license. And I got a driver's license and faxed it to the judge in Colorado and said, "I'm so sorry, I'm not coming to jury duty." And then I became a Texan. I have served jury duty since. I was not trying to skirt my responsibilities as a citizen. Just
all right, yeah, I was going to say, let's make a public service announcement. You should do your jury duty. You don't always have
to do your jury duty.
Go off to another
it's
state.
Very important.
Well, was music a big part of your youth when you were growing up in Colorado?
It was, but not in a sort of playing it way.
Okay.
It was more just something that I loved. My parents were both big music fans. They took me to a lot of shows when I was a kid, a lot of festivals. Music was always around. Like, I don't remember ever discovering like Jackson Browne or John Hyatt or Emmylou Harris or Joni Mitchell because they were just constantly being played when I was growing up. So I never got to have that kind of like rebel against your parents and listen to like cool music moments. But we didn't really, there wasn't a strong sense of music with something that could be played.
Okay.
Either. I didn't really, we had a piano in our house, but I'd never really learned how to play it. My dad had a guitar that he sort of banged around on a little bit, but it was very like, you experience music, you listen to music, you don't necessarily make music.
Well, now that you have been here a while, do you find many similarities between Texas and Colorado? I was curious.
I think there's a lot of similarities. There's some things that confound me still. I don't understand why Texas doesn't smother things in green chili.
We smother them in gravy.
it's a very different vibe.
Yeah.
I've come to love and accept breakfast tacos, but the breakfast burrito is still supreme.
Okay.
there's some small differences and things that are still kind of weird, but there's a lot of similarities too. There's a great respect for Towns Van Zandt in both states.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, Town spent a lot of time in Colorado and had a lot of songs about Colorado or referencing Colorado that kind of was a nice, easy way to make friends when I first moved here.
Okay, yeah. I hadn't really thought about that.
And very quickly in common with.
Well, since you've been here for several years at this point, and I know this is one of these cheesy questions, but what are your top three favorite things about your adopted home of Texas so far?
Oh.
Or top two, whatever.
Specifically in Austin, I love how close we are to outside space, and I can be on the lake in 10 minutes. There's all the green belts and places to walk and hike, and it's not hiking like you would do back in Colorado, but you also don't have to drive an hour and a half to get there.
Okay.
I love that. I love that. Maybe this is just a difference in where I lived in Colorado versus where I live now, but I love the sense of community, both in the music scene, but also just like in my neighborhood. And I think that's something that I hear from a lot of people who live here in Texas, that like you actually kind of do know your neighbors and you get to know people around. And I love that about it. And then, you know, the dance culture, the two-step scene.
Okay.
is a lot of fun and doesn't seem to exist outside of Texas as much.
Nice. All right. Well, I know that's like an impossible question to answer, but I was interested to hear your take on it, since you know you're not originally from here, but this is always kind of fascinating to us Texans, the things that people like when they make it this way. Well, I'm talking with Nicole Wagner here on Notably Texan. So, you know, prior to moving this way, was Texas a place that you had ever kind of dreamed of calling home? I know that Texas has a mystique.
It does. It had been on my radar for a little bit. I considered switching from Arizona State to University of Texas. It didn't really make sense at that point in time, just like credits and everything. So it was on my radar as a place that I was interested in. And I had been here a couple times for music related things, coming to South by Southwest or just to come see shows. I don't know that before maybe 2007 or 8, I was really thinking about it.
You got involved in the music scene upon arriving to Austin, but it wasn't as a performer. Tell me what you got your feet into when you arrived there in Austin.
I was primarily a photographer. I had started an online magazine for music in college, and it had sort of, against all odds, grown into something that I was able to kind of take with me wherever I went. So I did that in Colorado for a while. I did it in Arizona for a while. And then when I moved to Texas, it made sense to bring it with me. And I started covering the music scene here in Austin.
What was it that made you start sharing your talents at the open mics in Austin, I think about 10 years ago?
Yeah. I'd always wanted to be a musician. I'd wanted to make music even as a little kid. I'd, you know, sing in my mirror in the bathroom or whatever. And it turns out nobody comes and knocks on your door and goes, hey, we heard you singing in your bathroom in the mirror. Would you like to come be the next Stevie Nicks?
Right.
So I didn't have any of the pieces to connect this love for music and the desire to be part of that creation of music with how you actually did any of that. And since I didn't know very many musicians growing up, and the ones I did know primarily like performed in churches and things, I just didn't have that good path. Getting to know a lot of musicians through the photography and through covering their shows really gave me a lot more of a tactile way to go, there is no magic here.
Yeah.
You don't wait for somebody to knock on your door. You just go do it. And a really good friend of mine, we reconnected about that same time. We had lost touch for a while. And she was surprised that I hadn't started playing music. And basically told me that she didn't want to be 90 and in our rocking chairs with me, sad that I'd never tried. Why don't you just try? Go do it, because you have the answers now. And so then I took some guitar lessons and shored up some skills there, learned a couple songs, and took them to the open mic.
We are definitely glad you made that decision. How thrilling was it to release that first EP back in 2017?
I was pretty excited. It's funny, anytime you look back at the first iteration of a project, I think you look back and go, I was so excited for something that seems almost comical now.
Really?
you know, I I had booked a residency at the Carousel Lounge, and I plastered the entire town with posters about this residency.
Yeah.
And I don't regret it at all. I think it was a good move. It's funny to kind of look back at the things that were just completely blew your mind at that time, and kind of how far you've come since then.
Well, one of your early songs that I latched onto is Fires of Pompeii, We Should Walk Away, particularly the duet version that you did in 2018. So I was curious, how did your creative mind turn the fascinating story of Pompeii and Mount Vesuvius into this tale of almost romance?
Songwriters and creative people have a bit of a flair for the dramatic. And there was this guy I was crushing on really hard. And in my mind, I thought that I had done an excellent job flirting with him. It turned out I had not done that at all. He thought I hated him.
Oh, no.
And it felt like my interpretation of the events of that kind of song were very much that, like, it was electric. And obviously, like, this was just going to turn into a thing and we were going to be together. But also I could see even then, like, there's some things that probably are going to be kind of backfire and, like, blow up in our faces.
Yeah.
When you have the option, you take the dramatic approach.
Of course. No, I totally get it. Again, I'm really into impossible questions so far on you today. I'm sorry. Sorry, I should have warned you this was going to be a difficult interview, but I just wanted to pick your brain about that song a little bit.
That's all right, yeah.
My guest is Nicole Wagner here on 88.9 KETR. One of the things that I love about your music is its wide scope and eclectic nature, which is really kind of perfect for a show like Notably Texan. Tell me about some of the other music artists that you've kind of latched onto as influences through your life, because, like I said, you're not a one-trick pony in your music, for sure.
You know, I think some of the earliest influences that were purely mine that weren't as heavily played when I was growing up would be Stevie Nicks and Fleetwood Mac, Bonnie Raitt, Cyndi Lauper, Linda Ronstadt's another really big one. Tom Petty, I think there's quite a bit of Tom Petty influence, especially on this latest record. But on the same token, you know, people like John Hartford and Stan Bush, really all of Newgrounds Revival, that was played very heavily growing up too. Richard Thompson. I went through a very big Beatles phase in middle school.
Don't we all?
That are the Stones, it seems. Everybody has that blip.
Yeah.
Biggest influences would be Stevie Nicks and Linda Ronstadt, Emmylou Harris, Graham Parsons, Brandi Carlile, Tegan and Sarah.
You know, you've released music in a wide range of styles. I was really pleasantly surprised by your Dance Songs for the Apocalypse release back in 2020. I understand that you got praise from Neil Young for your cover of his song.
Not directly from him, but I heard through a friend of a friend, basically, or I guess a mutual friend of ours, that he had listened to it and enjoyed it.
Hey, that's like all you can ask for when you're covering a great like that, right?
Yeah, I was very pleasantly surprised.
Absolutely, as you should be. Well, Nicole, congratulations on this new record, Plastic Flowers. I love the diversity of sounds on the different tracks. A lot of these songs, to me anyway, feel like a glimpse into your soul and being. So do you find it kind of therapeutic to create music with such, you know, personal connections to your life?
Very much so. I think the first record, the EP and the first record were a little bit more guarded in content. They were real songs, but they were also songs that were maybe avoiding the super hard truths, or that were a little bit more surface, you know, I really like you, I wish you would like me back, or like, I know you really like me, but I don't like you anymore kind of level songs. And then Plastic Flowers is a much deeper and harder look at not only relationships, but like my own growth through those. And definitely much more introspective.
I assume that, yeah, that certainly makes a greater connection, you know, and to you with these songs too. And I think people can, you know, hear that and feel that too when they know a song is real and not just something that was created thinking, hey, maybe this will connect with somebody because so many people have gone through similar experiences in life.
Yeah.
So I understand that you have a real passion for the music of the late Texan Nancy Griffith, a lifelong fan, I assume?
Yes. Well, not exactly.
Okay.
I was too quick in saying yes because I feel like I've been a lifelong fan.
Yeah.
I discovered Nancy when I was in high school. She was, I guess, another one of kind of the discoveries in music that felt very much mine. I had gone to see Jackson Browne play a festival pretty close to where I grew up. So I was able to be dropped off and, you know, my parents came back later to see Jackson Browne. But I was there for the entire day because I really wanted to be like right up front.
Yeah.
So when Nancy opened or played before him, I guess more is the accurate way of saying that. I had never heard of her. I didn't know who she was, but I'd also never seen a woman get up on stage by herself with just her guitar and play a show for people. And that was kind of life-changing.
True.
To see that you could, that was a thing you could do. Because up until then, I had, you know, seen like Bonnie Raitt with her band or like a lot of artists with their bands, but not necessarily by themselves. And she might have had a single backup player. I can't remember exactly, but it was very much all about her and her guitar. And that was just a complete game changer for me in realizing that you could do that. Not very long after that, I also discovered Patti Griffin, who does very similar, you know, kind of her and her guitar shows.
Yeah.
But Nancy was the first that I saw that did that. And she immediately grabbed my attention, immediately fell in love with her songs, begged to go to the record store the next day to like get every record of hers I could find.
Yeah.
an immediate love.
Wow. And I would think that you were probably alone amongst your peers in being a Nancy Griffith fan.
I was a bit of an oddity.
I love it. I'm just thinking, you know, someone your age, probably, you know, your fellow schoolmates or whatever, probably were not into Nancy.
No, they weren't. But to be fair, they weren't into the vast majority of the music that I was into, so
I get it
didn't really matter.
Sure, I understand. Well, are you still hosting this tribute show for Nancy?
I am. We actually just had it this past weekend.
Oh, no kidding. So, how often is this? And tell me a little bit about it.
It's annual. I've been trying to get it as close to her birthday as possible, which isn't always feasible just given scheduling and university kind of closures. We do it at the Cactus Cafe.
Yeah.
If that seems like the most appropriate place to host it. It's been the fifth year, and it's just been an absolute joy. We've skipped a couple years. I skipped a couple years in hosting when my record came out and things got busy, and then picked it back up after she passed.
Okay.
So I'm very happy to say that it was something that, at least the first one, she was still alive when I chose to have the show. I was able to get kind of a message to her via some friends to say, hey, we're doing this show. It's going to be your songs because we love you, but obviously there's money going to be raised. So where could we donate that money that would feel like appropriate for her?
Oh, nice.
And like, was she okay with having the show? And it felt really important to, you know, so often we wait to have tribute shows until somebody's passed. And it was just really nice to be able to have that first one, especially while she was still with us, and be able to say, hey, we love you. We love your songs and we love your music, and it means so much to us.
Oh, that's awesome. I trust that you obviously were excited about this recent tribute record more than a whisper then.
Mm-hmm.
They should have tapped you to do a song on that.
Next time.
Okay, there we go. There certainly should be another. Well, Nicole, I've noticed a common theme of water in several of your album covers. Do you have any mermaid heritage or...
I don't know about mermaid heritage. My father does build these really gorgeous water features.
Okay.
So I grew up around water. It was just always around and always in like really beautiful sort of ways. We had a waterfall that wrapped around our entire house growing up, and he was always working on golf courses or other, you know, really big, gorgeous water features. And then we had a creek that went by our house and spent a lot of time on beaches. Just always was around water, plus water is life.
while I've still got you here, and I appreciate all the time you're dedicating to the show today, would you be willing to kind of give me your take on public radio and what it means to you, both as a recording artist and as an individual?
I think it's incredibly important. Having public radio is a way for the local community to be heard and to have things that are relevant to them available. Having gone especially to journalism school, it's where my background is, knowing how important local news sources are, especially that are supported and given the funds and the manpower and the respect that is needed to report on really important stories that are local. Everything starts local before it becomes national. And we need that type of reporting. We need that type of, shows that are playing music. We need that type of connection to community and to a local community in order to thrive.
Did you find a, kind of good relationship with more of the public stations, particularly when you were putting out your first couple of album releases? Because I know it's really difficult to get any attention, especially where you are, where it's so oversaturated with other artists.
Yeah. I don't have a breakdown of exactly which stations necessarily across the country are public versus not, but I do know that public radio has been absolutely kind of a stalwart in supporting both my career and my friends, people who I know. And I know that if I tune into the radio like I'm driving, the chances of hearing something that I want to hear on public radio are so much higher than if I tune to the local corporation-owned, iHeartRadio kind of thing.
I would just imagine kind of even stranger in Austin, of all places, who are renowned for their public radio. But, even Austin's public radio has gotten so big through the years that they may not even necessarily be able to focus on the little guys and gals the way they maybe once did. We're doing the best we can out here, and we love to feature artists like you and many of your cohorts there. So
we appreciate it.
I know with this new record out, I assume that you're probably doing some shows.
So right now I've got a residency at Hole in the Wall on Thursdays from 6 to 8. Nice happy hour slot. That'll be July and August. And we've got a show at the Bugle Boy coming up in August as well out in LaGrange, and working on some dates for the fall.
I'm sure we can keep up with your latest online somewhere, can't we?
Yeah, it's all on my website. It's NicoleWagner.com.
I'm sure somebody can figure out how to misspell it, but I think you should be able
to. If they figure out how to misspell it, I've probably got it redirected.
Okay, nice. All right, smart thinking.
Don't worry about the spelling.
Okay. That's smart. Very smart. Well, Nicole, this has been great. I'm so glad we had this opportunity to talk today. You are such a talented artist, and it was my honor to get your insights and make your acquaintance today. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you so much, and thanks for taking the time and for all of the support playing my music for so many years.
Absolutely. I want to wish you all the best.
Thank you, Matt.
A reminder that you can find her at NicoleWagnerMusic.com, which contains links to all of her social media, some music videos, details about upcoming shows, and lots more. And I'd like to acknowledge Adam Dawson with Broken Jukebox Media for getting Nicole Wagner and Notably Texan in touch. You can find more about us at ketr.org. And thank you so much for listening. I'm Matt Minkie.